So the Gemara on Daf Nun Hey Amud Beis tells us the following. Hayman, a person, the Ayil Mata, that goes into the city, V'dachil, and he is afraid, Me'ein Abisha, from the bad eye, Linkot, he should take, Zakfa, the thumb, the Yada Diyamine, of his right hand, V'yada Dismale, in his left hand. You put your right thumb in your left hand, V'zakfa Diyada Dismale, and the thumb of his left hand, V'yada Diyamine, in his right hand. So he's putting his right thumb in his left hand, and his left thumb in his right hand.
Like this?
I guess. V'lei mahachi, and let him say the following. Ana, I, Ploni bar Ploni, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so. Mizara di Yosef katina. I come from the offsprings of Yosef. Deloshalta be'ein abisha. That Yosef, the bad eye, has no control over. Shenemar, as the verse says, Ben Porat Yosef, Ben Porat Aleyain. The son that flourishes is Yosef, he is the son that flourishes, and he is above the Ain. Al Tikri Aleyain, don't read it that he is on the Ain, but rather he is above the Ain, Ela Oleyain. Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina Amar Mihacha, Rabbi Yosef Bar Chanina said the source for this concept that Yosef is above the evil eye is the fact that Yosef's offspring were blessed, v'idgul arov bekerv haaretz, they should multiply like fish in the land, madagim shebayam mayim mechasim aleim, just like the fish in the water, in the sea, are covered with water, v'enayin hara shulet them, and the bad eye has no control over them, af zaro shel Yosef en ayin hara shuletet behem, so too the offsprings of Yosef, the bad eye has no control over them. So we just read and translated the Gemara. Now before, that's a Gemara in Brachos Daf Nun Hei Amud Beis. And before we start analyzing this Gemara, we need a few introductions. The Gemara has many things within it. The Gemara has halachos within it. The Gemara has explanations of psukim within it. And the Gemara also has agada within it. Things that are, they do not pertain directly to halacha. They do not pertain directly to the understanding of a verse. They do pertain directly to what can be easily understood as stories or mystical things. And we have a tradition that they are deep philosophical concepts being encased in simple stories. Whenever we approach a Gemara that's an Agada, so we have to know we're learning Agada. Now, I didn't say this Gemara is Agada. But if we approach a Gemara that's Agada, so then we have to know that there's more to it than meets the naked eye. This Gemara can be understood simply. The Gemara is talking about how one can protect oneself from Ayin Hara. And we should have a separate class. We've already had a class discussing what is Ayin Hara. But I don't think we're going to focus on that tonight. I want us to understand different points tonight. When the Gemara gives us remedies, so if the remedies are physical remedies, the Gemara tells us if a person has a certain illness, then the recommended remedy is that he does A, B, and C. And we have Gemaras that way. The Gemara says if a person has an eye infection, then when he wakes up in the morning, he should take the first spit he has before he's washed out his mouth, and take from that spit, put it in his eye, and that'll cure his eye infection. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says Shmuel was a master doctor, and Shmuel knew all kinds of cures that no one else knew. And this is one of the cures the Gemara quotes. Some people will swear by this cure. They'll tell you that they've done it many times for themselves and their children, and it works. Okay. O sheken, o shelo. Either yes or no. I don't know. Tosfos writes in the beginning. I'll get it. Just a second. I'll quote you Tosfos. This is for Tosfos to know.
They put on what? On two remedies or?
Tosfos says, the Gemara at the end of the second perek of Moed Katan discusses, when is it good to eat different kinds of fish? Okay, so the Gemara says, where is it? Maybe it's the end of the first perek. The Gemara says, here, the end of the first perek, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph in Moed Katan. The Gemara says, Kavra, fish, Samuch Lemisrache, when it's just about to be spoiled, Ma'ali, it's healthy. You want to know when's the best time to eat fish? Wait till it's about to be spoiled, you eat it then, and wow, what a cure. Says Tosfos, Uvizman Hazeh, Tofsim Sakana Lemechal Samuch Lesirachot. Tosfos says, you know, today, everyone knows that it's very dangerous to eat fish when it's almost spoiled. Vegam mishte alei avua, and another cure that the Gemara says, after you finish eating fish, you know how the fish will help you? If you eat the salty water, it's swamin. You finish eating fish, drink some of that water, that's the best cure in the world. So the Gemara says it works. And Tosa says, in our days, if you do that, yeah, that's suicide. That's very unhealthy for you. So Tosa says, v'shema nishtanu, and maybe these spiritual cures, that Tosa says that this doesn't seem to be a cure that would make sense physically, it doesn't seem to be something that medically should work, but this is a spiritual cure, maybe this too has changed, k'mo ha'rfuot shebashas, just like all the physical medical cures of the Shas, we know they've changed. We know that the medical things the Shas recommended we do, that for sure changed, Tosa says. Maybe the spiritual things also changed. Maybe this type of remedy, which isn't exactly a physical, medical remedy, maybe this too has changed. So you see, Tosa takes for granted all the medical remedies you read throughout the Gemara, that says Tosa's, oh, we know better than this. This is Tosa's back in the Dark Ages. We're talking about Tosa's, when Tosa's lived? 700 years ago. 700, 800 years ago, Tosfos already says it's well known that the medicine of the Shas doesn't work. And maybe also the other things in the Shas that aren't directly medical, maybe they too don't work anymore. So we have to be aware of that. People sometimes think, it says it in the Shas, so it must work. So there's a famous letter by the son of the Rambam, in which he writes, when the Gemara discusses things that pertain to science, we shouldn't be close-minded and say, if this is what the Gemara says, this is how it happens. He says, people sometimes think, I'll take the Gemara literally, I'll say this is what the Gemara said, this must be the truth, and anyone who says otherwise, he's an apikoros. And what happens is, they're so strong in this belief, that if you try to tell them something different, they say, no, that if you say that, it's equal to knocking the rest of the Torah. The whole Torah is equal to their understanding of the Agados in the Gemara, and then when someone will show them, hey, here are the facts, it's not that way. So then when you can show them that their understanding of the Agadah of the Gemara is knocked, you'll also end up knocking the whole Torah by them. Because they've equated the whole Torah with their understanding of the Agadah of the Shas. And we discussed this at length last summer when we learned the Rambam's introduction to the 10th chapter in Sanhedrin, where the Rambam writes that the masses think they're being pious when they take the Gemaras that discuss Agadah. They take their literal meaning and they say, oh, that's what it is, and if you try telling me otherwise, you're wrong. This is what the Gemara says, so I believe it, and that's it. The Rambam said, the masses do it that way, and they're not giving honor to the Gemara, because the Gemara never meant it to be understood literally. The Gemara discusses why there's a solar eclipse, why there's a lunar eclipse. The Gemara gives physical reasons. The Gemara says if there's miscarriage of justice, if the enemies of Israel are going to get stronger, if they're going to get weaker, if the sun is eclipsed, so they get weaker, if the moon is eclipsed, we get weaker, we're represented by the moon, they're represented by the sun. Wait a second, I can forecast solar and lunar eclipses from today for the next 200 years. What does that mean? This is a forecast of who's going to be stronger? So obviously those Gemaras have to be understood. The Gemara says, if there's a miscarriage of justice, then this is going to happen astronomically. But I could forecast these astronomical occurrences. So the Gemara didn't mean literally when X happens, then Y happens. What the Gemara did mean is for a different class. There are different understandings as to what these Gemaras mean. But what we have to know is that when we read, be it the Agados of the Shas, be it the medical cures of the Shas,
be it the spiritual cures of the Shas, we have to take great caution, firstly, to know that we don't necessarily understand them. And even if we do understand them, they don't necessarily work anymore. In the Gemara's time, they did. The Gemara wasn't foolish. They knew what they were talking about. But something changed. We know things changed. The Gemara says in their time, Jewish women were born in a physically different manner than non-Jewish women. A Jewish woman wouldn't grow hair in her private parts. Naturally. Okay, today they do. So what are you going to say? You say, well, things changed. We're different. We're not the way that we were once. The Gemara tells us many things about the constitution of a woman, which we know changed. Many things that pertain to halacha, that we know, halachically, they changed. It's not the same. So we have to know that when we read these things, firstly, even if we do understand what the Gemara is saying, we can't necessarily apply it today. I have a friend who had hepatitis. The Gemara says, if a person has hepatitis, he should take white doves, shave off their bottoms, put them on his belly button, and then he'll get better. They drop dead, and he'll get better. So I have a friend, he had hepatitis. He's scientific. He called over a doctor. He was hooked up to all the machines to check the hepatitis in his blood. And then he brought a person who's supposed to be an expert at doing this. The person brought white doves. He shaved their bottom, placed one white dove on his belly button. The white dove died. Took the next white dove, shaved its bottom, put it on his belly button. It died. After a few of them, they stopped dying, and he felt much better. He was feeling like a dog. He couldn't move. And after all them, after a certain number died, and the next one didn't die, he felt much, much better. And medically, he still had as much hepatitis as he had beforehand.
What did he put on his belly?
The dove, a white dove that's shaved. A white dove that you shave off its bottom. Pigeon. Oh no, it's known that people who do this feel better. People who have hepatitis do this, and they do feel better. Medically, they're not better. Now, if you want to know another natural phenomenon, if you take a white dove. Right, now, this friend of mine, honestly, he's, you're talking about an exceptional tzaddik, one of the greatest tzaddikim that are around today. He heads fundraising for an orphanage of girls here. He heads fundraising for Tomchei Shabbos in a community in the U.S. He's a very, very fine person. He wasn't coming to mock or anything. He was coming. He had heard a lot of people who had hepatitis did this and they felt much better. And he wanted to see scientifically, well, what happens? So he tried it. And he saw he felt much better. Medically, there was nothing better about him. He went to his rabbeim, Rav Schwab, and other rabbanim, and he told them what happened. And they were horrified. They said, you took a medical recommendation of the Gemara and you tried it in modern times? How dare you? They were horrified. They said, you took a medical recommendation of the time of the Gemara and you thought you could just apply it today and it'll work? What are you doing? They were very upset with him. I wasn't privy to the information as to why they were upset with him. I don't know if it was because they felt that it's mocking the Gemara, because we see Tosus already writes that it's known in Tosus' time that these things don't work. So if you tell someone, well, something written in the Gemara doesn't work today, so people think, oh, okay, so then it's nonsense. It's not nonsense. It worked in their times. Things changed in our times. But there's another aspect to this. It could also be, before we go on to the other aspect, it could also be that they said, who told you you're not going to commit suicide? Who told you that this won't endanger you? In the Gemara's time, it worked. Today, do we know if it harms you? Like Tosa says, if you take fish when it's about to be spoiled and you eat it, you might die. You might get food poisoning. In Tosa's time already, they said this. Tosa says, in the Gemara's time, they thought differently. They knew what they were talking about. We don't know what they were talking about. The best we can say is that things changed. Nature has changed since then. But there's another aspect to it. The Gemara sometimes tells us certain spiritual things that do apply halachically. The Gemara says one is not supposed to put food under one's bed, because then when one sleeps, so then a bad spirit can land on that food. I found this out when I was on the Lower East Side. I was known yeshiva, and I was being invited out for Shabbos meals. And I hadn't yet learned this Gemara. And I in the United States, it's acceptable when you go to someone for a Shabbos meal, you bring something. So instead of buying wine every week for a hefty price, I went to the wine store and I said, how much will you give me a case of wine for? And he gave me a nice discount. I bought a case of wine. I had nowhere to store it, so I put it under my bed. Okay, it's under my bed for 2 weeks. And a roommate of mine says, don't you know the Gemara says that you're not supposed to eat food that was under the bed after you slept on it? So there went my case of wine. Until I asked someone who will remain nameless, because I don't know if he wants me to call in his name. And he said, no. Halachically, even after you've done it, we don't know which night the spirit comes and lands on the bottles. The Gemara says don't do it because the spirit could land on the bottle. But do we know that every night you sleep, this spirit comes and lands on the bottle? You could give it to your host. It's okay. But that's where I learned this Gemara, and later on I saw it myself. But this Gemara is quoted in Halacha. Halacha says you're not supposed to put food under your bed. The Halacha says you're not supposed to touch food before we wash an egel vaser. Before we wash our hands in the morning, it's considered as though there's a bad spirit on our hands, and if we touch any aperture, any opening to our bodies, or any food, so then that spirit can harm ourselves or someone else's body if we touch someone else's opening, or the food we touch. So some of these things are quoted la halacha. But what's very important to know is that these things that are quoted la halacha, you have to be very exacting about them. When we had our first boy, so I called one of my rabbeim and I said, it's very difficult to travel with a child in a stroller and the child falls asleep. We have food. If we can't keep it under the stroller, it means that my wife or I, whoever's with the baby, has to start carrying the food, the baby food or whatever it is in our hand. At the same time they're pushing the stroller, it doesn't work. It could work, but it's difficult. So he said, so put the food under the stroller. So I said, yeah, but the Gemara says you shouldn't put food under a bed that someone's sleeping in. So he said, right, but put the food under the stroller. So I said, yeah, but the Gemara says you're not supposed to put the food under the bed that someone's sleeping in.
It's not a bed. It's a stroller.
It's not a bed. So you see that when the Gemara tells us even these things that we do understand, we do apply logically, they are only applied exactly the way the Gemara said it. And the slightest nuance of a difference is already a totally different case. The Gemara didn't say it about that. I could give you other examples, but I don't think it's important. The important concept is, A, we don't know what they meant. B, the things have changed. C, it only works if you get it exactly right to the T. And now I want to review the Gemara with you. And being that the Gemara does tell it to us, I figured I got nothing to lose. Knowing all of this that I'm telling you now, I figured I got nothing to lose, and I did do it in circumstances where I had to go before a crowd and I was worried about Ayin Hara. But I always said to myself, I wonder if it's going to work, because I don't know if I'm getting it exactly right. And let's read through the Gemara, and I'll show you nuances that I myself have doubt how one is supposed to do them. It's not just as simple as just putting your hands like this and saying what the Gemara said. Because let's read the Gemara, and we'll see points in which it's difficult to know what the Gemara meant for us to do. So let's see. Firstly, the Gemara says, if a person is entering a city and he's worried about Ayin Hara, does the Gemara tell us it works any other time a person is worried about Ayin Hara? Was the Gemara just giving us an example, or was the Gemara telling us the only time when it would work? I don't know. So firstly, at the onset, we're a little bit stuck. Does it work any time out of this case? The Gemara added a few words that were unnecessary. The Gemara should have just began, if it's the way we think it means, the Gemara should have begun. If someone's worried about Ayin Hara, this is what he should do. The Gemara didn't say that. The Gemara said if someone's entering a city and is worried about Ayin Hara. So that's number one, just to blow a big hole in the whole thing. Number two, the Gemara says, he should take the thumb of his right hand in his left hand. Maybe it's important to have that order. The right hand first. No. Why should you wake him up? Let him sleep. Fine. He obviously needs it. I don't know. I'll tell you what, there was a guy who used to come every Shabbos afternoon to Rabbi Cheska of Ramsky's shir. Rabbi Cheska of Ramsky was one of the great Talmid Chachamim who lived in Jerusalem about 30, 40 years ago. He passed away about 30, 40 years ago. So he used to come fall asleep every Shabbos afternoon in the class. Now there are different stories about this Jew. Rabbi Abramsky asked him once, why do you come if you're falling asleep? So he said, one answer that's quoted is that he said, look, my neshama, when I go to sleep, goes up to Shemayim. They ask, where are you coming from? It's much better if it says it's coming from your class than if it's coming from my bed at home. So that's one answer he gave him. And there's another answer that's quoted that he said to him.
I leave home every Shabbos afternoon to come to your shir. I know I'm going to fall asleep. I know after jolt and everything, I'm going to fall asleep. But I also know that my children, they see that it's so important to me, the learning, that every Shabbos afternoon, as tired as I am, I get up and I go to shul to shir. They don't see me falling asleep here. They see me lugging myself out of the house, wiped out, going to shir. And that message is so important to me that I fall asleep here, not at home in bed.
For the sake of education,
yeah. It's very important. But when I was a first year in Merkaz Harav, so I had a roommate who would come learn when I'd take a nap. And he always used to tell me that it says in some Kabbalah sparm that if you're going to sleep at a time when you shouldn't sleep, like by day, when a person's really supposed to be productive, so then the best way to do it is when someone next to you is learning. Because then instead of your neshama going up to Shemayim and saying, hey, I'm here, even though I don't belong here, your neshama stays hovering over your head and listens to the other people learning. So look at how many good reasons there are to let him sleep. And aside from which, I don't think we have a right to wake him. He's sleeping, so let him sleep. By what right can we disturb his sleep? Okay, so let's continue. The Gemara says he takes his right thumb in his left hand and his left thumb in his right hand. Perhaps that order is important. And he says, I, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so. Does he say his father's name or his mother's name? Doesn't say. Mizara di Yosef kasinad loshot be'ena bisha. I come from the offsprings of Yosef that the bad eye doesn't have control over them. Shenemaz, the verse says, ben porat Yosef ben porat alein vigomer. The Gemara then says, etc. How far do you go in the pasuk? Are you supposed to finish off the pasuk? What are you supposed to read? Ben porat Yosef ben porat alein banot zada aleishul. Or are you supposed to go to the next pasuk? How does it work? So these were points. And then the Gemara continues and gives you the drasha. Al tikri alei ein ela olei ein. Don't read it alei, but olei. Is that part of the incantation? This addition of the Gemara, this additional understanding of the verse. So you have over here at least 4 points which one can doubt. And if one's going to do it, one has to be aware of all these points. And these are the points I could think of. I'm sure there are other points I didn't think of. So let's just review what we discussed. We said that when we learn these things, we don't always know what they mean. Even if we know what they mean, we don't know that they work nowadays. And even if they work, we have to get it exactly right. Which leaves us at a point where we have to wonder if it's worth investing our time and energy in something that we don't know if we understand, we don't know if it works anymore, and even if it works, we don't know if we'll know how to do it. But nonetheless, we at least covered the Gemara and this concept.
It's not with a double understanding. Some kind of... A secret message or something?
Oh, so...
Because is it about the bad eye?
So that we have to have a class on again.
Because all the examples we give me the impression it's about something totally different, perhaps. Because I can make any sense about it. When you read it, it makes sense if you read it, and you don't know, somebody doesn't know about it, so they're telling something, and there is some remedy, and that's the way you have to do it.
So that's why a person is not supposed to begin on his own. A person is supposed to learn by a Rebbe. A person is supposed to have a tradition. This is the oral law we're talking about.
That made me to think this is the message.
Correct.
Other message.
100%. For sure. There's much deeper meaning, and that a person has to have tradition for. And these deeper meanings are things that a person, even if a person's learning by a Rebbe, he won't find it out until he's learned for many, many years, and the Rebbe can trust him to give it over to him, because these are the Chazal encased the secret understandings of how the world works, of our tradition, of many of the important aspects of Jewish philosophy, but the deep aspects of Jewish philosophy, they encase them in things that seemed simple but really had a much deeper meaning. But we should merit to find to learn so many years by a Rebbe who has a tradition, who can teach us all this.
It's really difficult because, especially in some year, you didn't serve an hour, so you're learning with a rabbi.
Well, you're working your way up, and now isn't the time when you're going to get this. Now learn it and be aware that you don't understand and continue learning. There are other things which you could understand.
meaningless, but understand that you really need to, it's an oral tradition that's really meant to learn from a rabbi. That's like, you're meant to learn, it's meant to pass down from a rabbi, but there's only a certain amount of hours during the day that you actually study with a rabbi.
Right, but
to work it for yourself and take what you can take, and what you can't, move on, I guess.
So I think it's important to do both. You learn by Rebbe, and then you learn on your own, and then when you can, you reflect with the Rebbe what you've learned, and it goes back and forth. And of course, when a person starts out, he's going to make more mistakes. As he learns more, he's going to make less mistakes. So long as a person is constantly going back to the tradition and checking up and talking to a Rebbe, and it doesn't have to be that he's learning to Rebbe all day long, but so long as he's working and he's conferring back to the tradition, eventually he'll get it right. And I would say more than that. When a person is starting out, he doesn't have to go to Rav Yashiv. He doesn't have to find the greatest Rebbe when he's starting out. A person has to find someone who knows, who's learned from a Rebbe. Part of the problem in a place like Machon Meir is that the guy sitting next to you, who seems like he knows so much more than you, has only been learning 1 or 2 years more than you, and he doesn't have the tradition down pat. And he's not the one you should be learning from. That's why Machon Meir brings in people from outside. You have Tochnit Lev, Tochnit Levav, where they bring in people who have been learning for many years, and they're hopefully going to be able to present the things that a person needs to hear. So there are other ways of tapping into this. A person doesn't have to necessarily go to the Rebbe. You know what? There are thousands of Shiurim online. I also listen to Shiurim online. And that's how a person keeps growing. If it's online, if it's going to Shiurim, and a Shiur, hopefully, a concept like we discussed tonight summed up many points, which should give you an important outlook on many Gemaras. And now anytime you learn a Gemara about a remedy, you'll click back, hey, wait a second, I know not to apply now. We didn't cover one point tonight, we covered many points tonight. Remedies, superstition, the spiritual things in the Gemara, Agada, we covered a lot. And all the things that are even brought in Halacha, the things that we do take care about, that are, if you want to call them spiritual, we covered a great many things tonight. So that gives you keys to many sugyot that you'll learn. We'll learn some more. We'll cover other points, Be'ezrat Hashem.